Night. Can't believe tomorrow's our last full day here. This week is really flying by, even though it's been pretty relaxing as well. And I enjoyed Gary's talk this morning. He had a multitude of stories about people, and he ended with, God, who are you? And God is a God who loves people. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight, is people and how special you are. So I'm excited because this is about you. My daughter's name is Samantha. Carrie and I, my wife, we named her Samantha. But that's not her real name. And I don't know what her real name is. I don't even know what my real name is. And by that, what I mean is that in the New Testament, Jesus says that to the one who is victorious, I will give a white stone with a new name on it, known only to that person. So that's how unique and special every one of you are. That when we enter into eternity with God, Jesus will walk up and hand you a stone, and it's going to have a name on it personalized to you that only you know. That's fascinating to me and so intriguing. It's just as intriguing today as the first time I ever read that verse. I think my whole life I'll always be just as intrigued with that and eager to have that interaction with Jesus. It demonstrates just how special each person is to Jesus and how we're uniquely made. But I want to double down on that. And I want to read from Psalm 139. I don't want to do it with pronouns, though, so I'm going to actually use a specific people that are in this room. I've asked them and they said it was okay. So I'm reading from Psalm 139. So God created Paul Rathkamp's inmost being. God knit Paul together in Donna's womb. Paul is fearfully and wonderfully made. So you get the sense of how special each person is to God. I get the wonderfully made part. I was always kind of curious about the fearfully made part. And my wife made shirts for our family that said, I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. And we wore them all day at Disney World. And I didn't even know what the fearfully part meant. But fearfully is a Hebrew word, and the one used here, it means that you're in awe or you're in reverence of who that person is. So what that's telling me is that even though we're all unique, we're to be in awe and reverent of how God made each person. It goes on to say that God's eyes saw Paul's unformed body. All the days ordained for Paul were written in God's book before one of them came to be. This is like intensely personal, how God is with each person. And we're all very uniquely made by Him. But why talk about this? Like, so what's the big deal? Well, I think as Christians, we're in the business of relationships. So, and I would say that's the only business that we're in. And we are called to be understanding of people, to understand people. You know, when it's all over, do you think God's going to get all the iPads and iPhones together and say, oh, I'm glad I got these. Let's go put them over here and make sure they're okay. No, it's all about people. But because we are all unique, that immediately has a very powerful implication. That means we're all different. And what are you going to do with those differences? Are you going to judge them? Are you going to embrace them and understand them? So when I became a Christian, I heard pretty quickly that we're not to judge other people. And then I even read it in the scriptures. It makes sense to me. So I understand that's pretty common. But if I project my needs onto other people, or I project my style of doing things onto other people, that can feel like judgment to other people. If I'm critical of someone's needs that are different than mine, that's also going to feel like judgment to the other people. So I try to understand stuff a little bit better. And I want to move now into some real life applications of this. So Chip, let's tee up that video. Some of you have seen this video, but I think it's good enough that it won't harm you to watch it again. And if you haven't seen it, I think it's going to be a pretty good treat for you. So let's watch this video.
It's just, there's all this pressure, you know? And sometimes it feels like it's right up on me. And I can just feel it, like literally feel it in my head, and it's relentless, and I don't know if it's going to stop. I mean, that's the thing that scares me the most, is that I don't know if it's ever going to stop.
Yeah. Well, you do have a nail in your head.
It is not about the nail.
Are you sure? Because, I mean, I'll bet if we got that out of there...
Stop trying to fix it.
No, I'm not trying to fix it. I'm just pointing out that maybe the nail is causing...
You always do this. You always try to fix things when what I really need is for you to just listen.
See, I don't think that is what you need. I think what you need is to get the nail...
See, you're not even listening now.
Okay, fine. I will listen. Fine.
It's just... Sometimes it's like... There's this achy... I don't know what it is. And I'm not sleeping very well at all. And all my sweaters are snagged. I mean, all of them.
That sounds really hard.
Thank you. Ow!
Come on, if you would just...
Don't!
That video does a pretty good job of showing how differences in needs can come into a relationship. And it's easiest to talk about this stuff in the context of a marriage, but this applies to all relationships. There is a stereotype in that video that's not true, that the woman is always the emotional one. And that's not true in my marriage. Carrie's much more logical and less emotional than I am. I'm the more emotional one. I've met with a lot of couples where the man is more emotional than the woman, so that's kind of not a real stereotype, not an accurate one. And I want to read a verse now. It's a very short verse, but it's one of these, like, one of the hardest verses in the Bible. So it's 1 Peter 3:7 out of the ESV. And it says, husbands, live with your wife in an understanding way. I mean, that's heavy. That's just such a short sentence, but it's so heavy. So much is involved with that. So we're called to understand these people, because we do have these differences, and to understand them and how we're going to interact with them. So to unpack that, I'm going to share some real life situations. For my marriage, I ask that you won't judge me in these situations. And I'm going to start with an emotional one. My son, we took him to college maybe 3 or 4 years ago. I wish he was done, but he's like not even halfway done. So the math of that's all messed up. But So I was a little concerned about taking him to college. It just didn't seem like he was ready. And we had a set time that we had to be there. We had to be there by 1 p.m., very specific time to check him in. And so we backed, 3 hours off that. We knew when we had to leave and couldn't get him out of bed that morning. You know, kept waking him up, trying, and he just wouldn't come out of the room. And all of his stuff is in the living room ready to get packed up. And I was waiting for him to load it so he can start to understand life. And He never woke up, and that time came where it had to be loaded, and I had to load every single thing myself. And so Carrie's trying to get him up while it's August, I'm sweating hot and mad. And so my thought from then on was, when we get there, maybe I'll slow down to 5 miles an hour and we'll just kick him out of the car. I don't even want to stop to drop him off at this point. But to Carrie, we're dropping off this baby boy that she held like this for 3 months. So we're at two different perspectives on this already, and I'm just getting madder as we drive. Like, yeah, he did that. Oh, I can't believe it. And she's just like, oh, it's my sweet boy, you know. So we get there, and I just want to kick him out of the car. And Carrie wants to go up into the... He also picked a very stupid dorm, like on the ninth floor. It was hideous. I had this beautiful three-story, you know, awesome thing. He picked the stupid one. So you had to go in an elevator. Carrie's wanting to put sheets on his bed and organize things. And I'm just going, oh, I'd love to punch him really right now. And this went on and on for hours where I just couldn't take it anymore. And I went and sat in the car. And she couldn't understand. And so she finished off upstairs with him. Came down. I knew it was going to happen. I knew we were heading for a fight. And so she was mad, and I knew it. And she got in the car. I just wanted to drive home silence and not fight, but she wanted to talk about it. And I said, can we just wait till we get home? No, let's talk about it. And like within 30 seconds, it was just screeching anger. And so we drove home, and we said a lot of hurtful things to each other. A lot. She said a lot. I said a lot. We had a lot of time in the car. And then God, it got worse. We pulled in the driveway and did another hour of it. And so we went to bed mad. And I woke up in the morning first. And I thought, okay, she said this, this, this. Okay, this, I want to address this hurt. She said this about me. That's not true. This is going to take 3 hours to work through. And she's not up yet, right? So she gets up at 9. We're going to be talking till lunch. And so I'm all set. I'm ready to go. This is a 3-hour conversation. She woke up, came out of the room, and she said, all right, here's what we're going to do. Boom, boom, boom. I was like, that was 10 seconds. I thought we were going to go 3 hours. And so I had a decision to make, because she had a different approach to this thing. She's not emotional like I am. And I thought, well, that is the right solution. If I'm going to be logical and step out of my emotions, those are the right solutions and how we go forward. So then I had another decision to make about, am I going to drag her into 3 hours of emotional talk? And I decided not to on this particular time, because it was just too much. She'd been through enough. So I chose to meet her where she is on that one. Other times I do ask her to kind of come in and talk more on the emotional side of things. And she likes to just fix it and move on, and I appreciate that. So a lot of times I'd be driving around thinking, you know, God, why does she so unemotional, and I have this need, and I can't get it met by her. Why does it have to be like this, complaining? And then one day I said, God, time out. I'll take all that back, because she's unemotional. I don't have to listen to anything, really. I don't have to listen to a bunch of emotions and stuff. And so, you know, I've described the situation, but there's a way that it can be put in a visual form, and it can even be quantified to help this understand this difference. So, Chip, now let's pull that up. So this is from the Berkman, which we're going to talk about, because it helps with these kinds of things. So Carrie's need is at the top. She's a 23, and she needs an unemotional environment. She wants to fix it and move on. And the problem is, she has a husband who has to talk things out. Is a 75. So my 75 is that I have to talk it out to sort it out. If I don't talk it out, the problem bounces in my mind and gets bigger and bigger and worse, and I magnify the problem. But if I can talk it out, I can start to sort it out, because I'm getting it out of my mind. But she just wants to fix and move on. So that's a big difference on a big topic in our marriage. This is not just husband-wife relationship stuff. This is friends, work, everything type of relationship. So you can see that we're 50 off out of 100 scale. That's significant enough to have to be dealt with in our home. So a lot of times it's the give and take. I understand this about her. She understands it about me. So I'll tell her sometimes, like, hey, this one, I need to get this emotion out, and here's why we can talk about it. So I want to talk now about communication, and we'll pull that one up. So could we be further apart in how we communicate? Carrie's the 94 at the top, and I'm the one. Okay, so we could almost not be further apart, just by five, so why even talk about it? 99 is as high as you can go, she's a 94. So Carrie's communication style is that she will think before speaking. She's thoughtful, and she's purposeful in how she'll communicate, and she's sensitive and careful. That's a 94. A 1 is a challenge because I'm very direct, very blunt, and I don't also like words or reading, so I don't have the vocabulary. So I'm really hamstrung with this 1. So in my marriage, I have heard so many times, why are you so harsh? And I honestly think, what do you mean harsh? How is that harsh? I don't even know how that's harsh. So I'll give you an example, but you can't judge me. So at Christmas time, I was getting tired because I do all the dishes because I like them done a certain way. That's a whole other topic, but... I do the dishes, but at the holiday, you're doing too much cooking, too many dishes. I was getting tired, and Carrie said, I'll help you. I'll do the dishes. So she did the dishes. I went into the kitchen later that night, and I looked at the dishes, and there was plenty of food on them, food on the backsplash, on the faucet. And I thought, oh, my gosh. I might as well just done it myself, because now it's more work for me, actually. So I just get busy, and I start doing the dishes. But she's already done them. She's like, why is he redoing the dishes? So I'm at the sink, and she comes right here at the counter, and she leans on it and goes, what's wrong? Did I not do it right? And I'm staring at these dishes, and all I can think to say is you have to at least try to not get it right. You didn't even try. I know not to say that. I'm like, don't say it. Just don't say it. And so I'm staring at the dishes, and she's right here. She goes, what's wrong? Why aren't you talking? And I'm thinking, just don't say that. What else could you say? And then, and now time's passing, and she said, what's wrong? Why aren't you talking? And that is her trigger. When I don't engage with her, if I don't talk, that sends her. So her blood pressure's through the roof at this point. And she storms off, and I'm like, okay, I survived it. I lived. I made it through. And I said, what's wrong with you? You can't think of another way to say it? And so... I went to her a couple hours later, and I said, Carrie, I'm sorry that you married a 1, but you won't believe this. I couldn't think. You didn't want to know what I was going to say. I trust you. I mean, trust me that you didn't want to hear that. But I couldn't. The problem is I couldn't think of another thing, another way to say it. So I'm going to ask that you will give me grace with my 1. When I freeze, I'm not trying to piss you off. I'm hamstrung. I can't think of another way to say it. And I've struggled with this my whole life. Sometimes people say, you're quiet. I'm like, no, I'm not quiet. I know I can't say what's at the tip of my tongue. So that's a huge difference in our marriage that could cause tremendous problems. And this just gives me a way to communicate to her. I could go, Carrie, look at this. You're dealing with a 1. And I have a low interest in words and stuff, so I'm not going to pick them out to talk. It's just blunt and harsh is how I come across. So this has brought a lot of help into our marriage. And so we'll look at one more here, insistence. So we go to the. So I've called it planning up here because it's planning. It's also called insistence. I'll unpack that a little bit for you. So. Carrie is the bottom one. She's a 66. I'm a 16. This in and of itself is meaningless, right? But now I'll give you the story about it. So the weather got nice, and Carrie said, she said, let's go on a bike ride. I want to do 5-mile bike ride. And we have not been on bikes in a long time, so that's enough mileage to do. So we set out. We do 2.5 miles out. And I looked at her, because I felt great. I thought, oh, we keep going. Let's do 10, not 5. And I looked at her to see how she looked, and she looked strong. I said, hey, do you want to do 10? She said, yes. So we went out 5 instead of that 2.5, and then went back, and it was 10, and she did great. And we got home, and everything was good. And then I looked at my phone, and Josh texted me and said, hey, we can go to dinner tonight, but if we don't go tonight, we can't go until like July. And this is in May. And so I told Carrie, I said, hey, if we have to go to, I don't think I said we have to. I think I said Josh and Christine can only go to dinner tonight. And if we don't go tonight, you're not going to meet her before Mo Ranch because they were coming here for the first time. And that's just going to make it harder on both of you. So do you want to go to dinner? She said yes. And we went to dinner. And Josh opened with the funniest story ever. We couldn't even breathe for probably 15 minutes of laughing. And Carrie had a great time. It was like one of our best outings ever with a couple. Had a great night. But we're driving home, and she's super pissed off. And I'm like, what could have happened? Like, between walking from the restaurant to the car, what could have happened? So I said, what is wrong? And she said, I told you 5 miles. I said, but I asked you, and you said yes. She said, and I told you any weekend but this weekend to go out. I was like, oh my gosh. I told you it was the only weekend they could go. And you said yes, you could have said no, and we wouldn't have gone. She said, I told you. And then I hit a pothole, and I was driving her vehicle. She goes, you hit a hole. I went, okay, this night's over. So I was thinking, she's crazy. This is no logic. This makes no sense, right? We went to bed mad, not talking. And I woke up in the morning, and I said, what is her insistence score? It's got to be high. I know it's high. I would bet my life on it. And so I ran and got her report, and I pulled it up, and she was a 66. I said, yes, I knew it. So she needs to know, to have a definite plan in place. She needs to know what the plan is, have clarity on the plan, and she wants to insist on keeping the plan in place. I have a need to change the plan. That's what the low 16 is. It's fun for me to make a judgment call, make a game day decision, and totally change everything. So I have a need to change the plan. So when she woke up, I said, Carrie, you have a high need to keep the plan in place. And I'm going to honor that need from now on. Even though my need is different, I can get that met elsewhere without trampling on your need. So I'm going to honor your 66 need to keep the plan in place now to bring her some comfort about how the future of this would work. So I have worked very hard to put, when we put a plan in place, not to tweak it too much on her, if at all, really. And another thing she would always do, which really drove me crazy, is I'd say, hey, we're going to have dinner with my parents next month on this day. And she'd go, okay. And then the next day she would say, remember, this is like next month. The next day she'd say, what time are we leaving? That's like day of decision. Not right now. I'm not going to think about that right now. They used to drive me crazy. But that's the 66 need there. So this is another way we have used this tool to help us in these true little disagreements and fights that can go into bigger things. I mean, it can get really big in a marriage. So I know some of you have taken the Berkman, and some of this is somewhat repetitive. What I hope you could take from this is maybe a little refresher in how you could really bring it into relationships. And I would encourage you to deal with it sincerely with your spouse. And a byproduct of that is you'll naturally be able to deal with it with other people outside of those relationships as well. I'm going to give you another quick example. We have plenty of time. So I'm going to talk about assertiveness. No slides on this one, Chip. So I'm low assertive, meaning that I'm not real forceful with my opinion. But Jason is very high assertive. So a high assertive person like Jason is very confident and forceful when they communicate. It feels like it's coming down on a person like me that's low assertive. So another thing is high assertive people are comfortable sharing a difference of opinion, but low assertive people are striving for agreement. So Jason would say something and go, he knows that's not what I think. And he just created this big difference between us, and I'm trying to close that gap. I'm striving for agreement, I'm trying to build consensus, and he could care less about that, because that's how high assertive people are. And I would think we have problems in our relationship, and he has no idea, because that's not even in his thinking. And once I understood how assertiveness works, I totally relaxed. And I said, oh, he can share a difference of opinion openly without concern, even if he knows I don't believe that at all, if I have the opposite opinion. So I could just relax in our relationship, and it really helped me. You probably have no issues in that one in particular. Yeah, but for me, it helped tremendously. And he didn't have to change anything. That was just all me internally, understanding how I'm going to deal with the high assertive person. Because there's just that difference. So if I was to project my way onto him and say, oh, that Jay, he's something's wrong with him, I'd be wrong. You know, I just need to understand and then adapt and adjust to it and things like that. So those of you who have not taken the Berkman or don't have any experience with it, today's your lucky day. There's been some really good generosity within the kingdom, and so we can offer that you could have the Berkman's not cheap, it's expensive, but you can have a free Berkman for anyone that's in this room as a couple, and even including up to two children, adult children. It's not good for young kids to take this because they don't have enough life. It won't be a valid report. So for two adult children. So I'm happy to announce that through some generosity we can offer this Berkman to you couples and to adult children. And if you're single, it's the same offer. And I would encourage you to take it up. And it can be like drinking from a fire hose the first time you go through the Berkman. It's 36-page report, so it's like a lot of information. So you kind of go, oh, that's neat, and then you tuck it away and never look at it again. I would encourage you not to do that. Like, remember, I'm fighting with Carrie, and I'm like, what the heck? And then I wake up, what is her score? And I go get it, and I'm like, okay, I know now exactly how we're going to deal with this. You can do that in your marriage. It really helps. So the way to, we can do that last slide, Chip. So if you just want to take a picture of that or write it down, you could reach out to me. And what this would look like is, if you wanted to take the Berkman, let me know, and I will email you a link to take the online assessment. It takes about 45 minutes online. As soon as you submit that, I'll get a report, and then we'll set up a time, which takes like an hour to an hour and a half to review an individual's report. And so a couple, you know, you'd probably want to do the one spouse and then the other spouse, and then we could even do a together session on that if there's some like big differences to highlight. But this could add a lot of value in your relationships, and I really do want to encourage you that it's not just husband, wife, it's how you're going to interact with other people. And one thing I wanted to mention earlier was that as Christians, we're in the business of relationships, and I'm proposing that's the only business we're in, because God doesn't care about the iPad. I think the reason we go to work is so that we will bump into other people and have to deal in relationship with them. That's why we go to work. The actual work itself is not what God is wanting us to produce. It's the relationships. So Chad Cunningham gave a great illustration of that yesterday. Chad's an engineer. So he's at work and he wants to take Dylan and he's got a relationship with Dylan. He wants to start meeting with him at lunch and grow the relationship. Elevator opens up and now a new guy wants to come into that. That's the perfect illustration of why we go to work and how important these relationships are, and why this would be something that you can invest in. So I thank you for your time. I know it's late and we got to shift to the talent show. We got a couple minutes if there are any questions. If not, that's fine too. Yes, sir.
You started with the video about the guy trying to fix his wife. How do you step into this marriage and not try to fix the other person? Because I could see myself, you know, like looking at their stuff and being like, oh, I get it. Almost weaponizing it.
Yeah. Right.
But you know what I'm saying? So how do you get to a place in marriage where you can use these things in a manner that it really is to serve him and not to try to win the war?
That's a great question, Jason. And I think for me, it's been understanding myself. And then understanding other people, not in purposely knowing I'm not going to try to fix a difference, right? And I don't want to project my need on somebody else. Like, I wouldn't want to change your assertiveness. God made you that way. You're on purpose, high assertive from God. So I'm not going to change any of that ever. I'm just going to understand how to deal with you and not change you. So definitely not weaponizing the Berkman is a key. And so understanding self, and that will help you understand other people's Berkmans as well. And then just embracing those differences and knowing how you're going to coexist with it. Carrie, I have such a high need to outlet emotions and issues, and she is not built for it. So I don't want to tax her all the time with that. I got to pick my moments with her without changing her. But then, I know the people that are high emotional that can take it, and I call them. So, like, I've been talking to Tommy Najjar a lot today because he can take it. But we got a long string going, and so I find the people, and I go to them to meet that need.
So are you yes. saying Tommy does the same need?
Tommy is high emotional, straight down, need, style, everything. So he can live in the world of emotions. Yeah, so I can go to him and go, hey, something's heavy on me today. I want to give it to you. I don't overburden him. I want, because he's got a life too. But today was the day I needed. And so I dumped it on him. And man, he jumped in and like peace was coming from him. You know, he was helping me with the Lord, but a lot of peace came from it. Yeah. Blair. So I have two answers. The Berkman answer is you don't really need to retake it because your needs will not change substantially enough to retake it. So your usual behavior, you can adjust your usual behavior a little bit, but your needs, which is the heart of the report, won't change that much. But then occasionally after very dramatic life change events, there could be some changes. And then I'm just so curious as a person that I, like, take, you know, retake it. So I did a Berkman for a 19-year-old, and she came back to me at 25 and said, I'm a different person. I want to retake it. And she retook it, and I was so excited to get it and see if it changed. Her needs were almost to the number, you know. But some of her usual behaviors did change, and her interests had changed quite a bit. But the essence of it is needs, and it is. So I've never retaken it. Curiosity hasn't killed my cat yet. All right. Yes, Randy.
Just wanted to, Carol and I had both taken it, and I think Carol's first comment to me was, we're so different, why should we be together? And I think everybody's got to be careful just to understand that differences are good.
Yeah.
If you were both identical,
right.
You wouldn't need to.
Yeah, I can't make any correlation that if you have so many differences, you shouldn't be together, and if you have so many similarities, you're going to have a great marriage. I've never seen that play out. So that's just my personal opinion on it. And I purposely opened up with the fact that God made every one of us completely unique and completely different. So it's almost kind of silly to say, we have differences. Okay, yes, you do. Yes. Yeah, we know how to deal with our differences. So in that sense, yes. Carrie still needs an unemotional environment, but she can flex into helping me when I really need it. And then I can understand if she had a super heavy day at work, and even if I had something burdened on my heart I wanted to get off, I would probably not take it to her. Right? So we've changed in that way.
Or not very bending.
Yeah, right. Because if someone has a super high need, what that means is it's very prevalent. So for it to change a lot is going to be hard. So if someone's like Carrie's, if you could go back a couple of, well, it's not her need, but well, the go forward one, that 94, that's prevalence. So it's so prevalent. Like for me to ask her to be harsh and direct would be kind of a silly thing to ask, right? Does that answer it?
That helped. I see somebody said in the grid of our life, hey, it's my baby. I'll do this, and I'm more of a planner. But I have learned to adjust because that just continues to be something. So I don't mean like dating me, but God has softened me to not be quite structured.
Yeah, yeah. So you're naturally doing it. Yeah. Yes, sir. So I took the Berkman probably maybe 15 years ago, and I thought it was interesting, and I kind of put it in a drawer for 10 years. And then I, more recently in like 2016, 17, 18, started getting more interested in it. And then I got certified in how to walk someone through their Berkman. So Berkman trained me in it, but that wasn't the real training. Then the real training was I was very fortunate to get to do hundreds of Berkmans. And then I really understood the tool because people would they would communicate and I could start making correlations from what the numbers were saying to how they were communicating. And it just opened it up where I got a really good understanding of how the tool works and how to communicate it to people. And implications of it and started bringing it into my life, and then it helped, and I'm just a big, big fan of it now. All right. I think we're at about 7:50 anyway, so. Well, I appreciate your time, and look forward to anyone that wants to do the Berkman. I'm very happy to help you through that, so thank you for listening.